Mr.
Fastly.
Goody.
Hey, I was gonna say I'm Fastly, and I realized I don't know what Fastly is. I'm fastly becoming unenamored with my own singing intros. Is that a thing?
I
I
think it
don't know.
works.
Hey, so yeah, I almost didn't make it back in time, but I did. Because
From work?
I spent a little bit extra time at work that
Ah, good for
I
you. But you're
hadn't
salaried,
planned
so it
on.
doesn't really matter.
Really, it is funny. I don't know about you. I think that, I don't like talking about work that much.
Yeah.
But I think I can put this in. Oh, great, the furnace is on.
Shut it off.
I am salaried, but I still fill out a time card every week.
Just to prove
It
to
doesn't.
your bosses that you are actually working.
I think it's because, we charge, as a contractor, we charge companies for our time.
Yeah.
And so it's our way of saying this is how much we worked for you.
Right. Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. I had lunch with a friend of mine last week. He works at a large tech company here in Seattle. I'm not going to name it, but I will tell you it is not Amazon.com.
Okay.
But it is another large tech company that you and everybody has heard of. And we were talking about work. He's an old friend of mine, and I'm like, I live in the city. I enjoy living in the city because I get to walk everywhere. I don't have to commute by a car. So I'm in that regard, I don't have that kind of stress. He lives in Renton, works in downtown Seattle, and he and his family, and the reason he lives in Renton is because he's got a family. He's got like three kids. And they're about to move out of the state. And so they're getting rid of a lot of things. And one of the first things to go was his car. So I'm like, do you take the bus to work? And he's like, no, my company provides a shuttle. So his wife drives him to the pickup place in Renton, and he takes the shuttle in. And I'm like, well, how long does that take? And he's like, oh, my average commute is about about an hour and a half. And I'm like, so you commute an hour and a half each way? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, do you work while you're on that commute? And he's like, yeah, I have my laptop and there's Wi-Fi on the bus. And I'm like, so your employer gets 3 free hours out of you every day of work.
But again, he's probably salaried, I'm
He's
guessing.
salaried and he's making a lot more money than I'll ever see. So, I mean, if he's cool with it. So, I just found that odd.
I had a conversation with somebody that okay, so Bernie Sanders occasionally will use the phrase the top 1% of the top 1%.
The top 1% of the top 1%.
Right.
Okay.
The reason I think, maybe he doesn't, but I think he does. And the
Well,
reason
I'm not.
I mentioned that is that I don't really listen to Bernie Sanders, but I listen to comedian James Adomian imitate Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And he uses that phrase
All right.
sometimes. And
I
I
don't know
didn't really.
everything. I don't know everything Bernie Sanders has ever said, but I've not heard that phrase. But I
So,
wouldn't put it past him. Sounds like something he'd say.
but I understand it now. And that's that the 1% in the United States is actually the earning gap. I mean, the earning cutoff to being part of the 1%
Yeah.
is actually much lower than I thought.
What is it?
I don't know. Well, I don't know exactly what the number is. I only know the number that he told me.
I can only imagine that the top 1% of the top 1% is only like 50 people.
See,
And
you'd think that, but I.
half of those people are the Waltons.
Well, here's the thing. The 1%,
Yeah.
according to this guy, now I could be
Are you still
wrong.
talking about James Adomian?
No, according to the guy who was telling me about the
Oh, okay.
1%,
According to
about how
comedian
the.
James Adomian, the 1% only includes.
No, so this guy, it seems to me to be a guy who knows what he's talking about. Said that the cutoff for being part of the 1% in the United States is actually something like $120,000
What?
a year.
Really?
And that, like, Now, who knows about the time period of when he got this information? Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, I mean,
maybe
like,
he learned this.
Are we talking Depression era?
Well, no. Like, that was the thing, is that like something like 80% of people in the U.S. make under $88,000 a year, stuff like that. Just like, it's lower than you think was his big thing.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. And it's a percentage, so it's probably constantly moving.
Yeah. So, and if you take that worldwide, it's even lower, right. Basically.
So, I don't know. It just sounds like $100,000. Like, if you gross $100,000 a year, that doesn't sound like the top 1%, because that's
not... Well, you also live in Seattle, Washington.
Well, yeah, you know, and you know, every fifth person around here is a tech bro. But, you know, the image that the 1% evokes is, you know, billionaires and their yachts. I don't see tech bros with their, you know, yachts.
But if you're trying to get people to be against the 1%, it's a very handy image to have of what the 1% are. But if you think that the 1% are like your boss, well, I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I get along with my boss. I like my boss.
Right.
But there's a good chance that my boss fits into that 1% category.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Can you tell from what I'm saying that I make under $120,000? Maybe so. Maybe you can, but maybe I'm playing my cards close to my chest.
I was snooping on one of the Slack channels at this place I was working at last summer. And a lot of changes are happening at that company. They're tightening the drawstrings, tightening the belt straps, whatever the phrase is.
The purse strings.
Thank you. They're tightening the purse strings. And, you know, things like the lavish Christmas party they had last year is no longer a thing. It's now just like a happy hour on a Thursday, right? And the people who worked at the company got upset, you know. Never mind that the benefits package that you get when you're a full-time employee is remarkable, you know.
Yeah.
You're not going to get S-faced, you know, on the company's dime. But
I think you mentioned there's always food available.
And there's always food. Working at this place is, you know, if you're able to get a job there, I think you're pretty, not lucky, but, you know, I think it's a good place to work. I really do. And I just kind of laughed a little bit because as a contractor, I wasn't allowed to go to the Christmas party anyway, so I don't care.
Yes.
But one of the fallback, like, there was a day where, like, everybody was, like, really upset, and then things kind of settled down the next day, and people started to be like, all right, well, let's, like, take stock of where we work and enjoy the good things. You know, talk about the good things. And there's like somebody put down this like list of like 50 things you get being an employee of this joint. And
all the contractors were able to see this.
Exactly. Oh, look at what else I'm missing out on. Anyway, so somebody was like, you know, I looked up this company and such and such this, such and such that, an average, no, a median income of $111,000 a year, blah 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 blah. And I'm like, holy crap, a median income of you know, $111,000 a year. And I found that surprising. But what I found surprising is that everybody else who worked there found that surprising. Like, who's making all this money? You know?
Yeah.
It's skewed because the executives are millionaires.
Sure. Yeah.
The worker bees, you know, they're making probably a nice income, but they're not making six figures.
So yeah, and that's one of the things, because I've been thinking about this city versus, you know, kind of small town, and one of the things I just realized, and this kind of fits, even rich people, but maybe not as much rich people, but people who live in cities don't think that much about space being theirs, if that makes sense. In the Midwest, like, people think of the sidewalk as being part of their property.
Right.
In Seattle, I think that's a lot less. Right. I think that the idea that this house is mine, but the sidewalk is public property, it's a little bit more ingrained.
Well, there's also probably a lot more multifamily units in cities than there are in the country. So, yeah. Like, the sidewalk in front of my apartment, I don't consider mine. If I had a house there, maybe.
Well, and then also, I guess, the other thing is, you know, public transportation, streets, all that. You've got people walking up and down all the time.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, the only people that used the road in front of my house were the people that lived in my area.
Right.
You know, usually. So an arterial street didn't exist. So the idea that strangers would be driving past your house was a lot less.
Right.
Which I think is interesting. All this to say, none of those people were part of the 1%.
Thanks for bringing it back around.
Speaking of not part of the 1%, my wife, Jennifer Factchecker, has informed me that there are no corrections for today. So let's just get that out of the way.
Cool.
Corrections, for those of you who don't know, Ben and I do not do research or take notes or anything like that for this show. It's a point of pride that we no longer look things up because we are trying to fight the Wikipedification, I made that up, of human knowledge.
I'll allow it.
And because eventually that might go away. How much do you really know? Well, we find out by just talking and then letting you, the listener, write to us at bensemail@yahoo.com@gmail.com.
Yep.
And tell us, hey, you guys, you did this, you said this, it's actually this. And the reason for that is because, as we've stated many times in this program, this is a record for future generations to listen to and find out what life was like in the early 21st century.
Audio,
I'm pretty excited about it.
Audio archaeologists are going to dig this show up from the rubble.
Yes.
And we'll have to study it to find out what life was like
in the early 21st century. It's a little thing we like to call Ben and Paul's audio time capsule.
Speaking of the early 20th century, this decade is almost over. Can you believe that?
I can believe it. Just think, wait a second.
Because time marches on.
Does the decade stop in... this is a problem we had with the millennium when it came around in 2001. 2000 was not the new millennium. 2001 was the new millennium.
Yeah, I heard that.
People would say.
There's probably, you know, a mathematical reason for something like that. I don't ascribe to it.
But here's the thing. When we talk about decades, Ben, do we talk about the starting in the 21s? No, we talk about the 20s. So I'm with you on that. New decade.
Yeah.
2020.
But one of the reasons why I bring that up is because as of this month, November 2019, the movie Blade Runner is no longer in the future.
Blade Runner
takes place November of 2019.
And, hey, we're pretty close. Pretty close to where they expected us to be. No mining colonies on Mars with robots, but we do have Big Dog, so it's pretty close.
We don't have personal flying cars, but we do have drones used by the police. So, you know.
Yay. Yeah, so I...
And William Sanderson is still alive, so there you go.
Wait, who's still alive?
William Sanderson.
Who's that?
Home Again, Jiggity Jig.
Oh, yeah, actor.
I don't remember his name, but his character's name.
Yeah. But he was in Deadwood. So in the future and also in the past.
Yeah.
What an interesting fella. Oh, also, of course, famous on Newhart.
Yeah. As Larry with his brothers Daryl and Daryl.
That is correct. Which, I gotta say, Bob Newhart, I heard him on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, which is a good podcast that I listen to.
Yeah.
Bob Newhart, still pretty funny. Funny guy.
Yeah, I like Bob Newhart. He's like in his 90s these days, isn't he?
Yeah, I would say so. Probably.
Still kicking.
Yep. One of the things that I like doing now is telling people who are conservative that I talk to that I am left-leaning.
Yeah.
Left-leaning. And then allowing... Yeah. I'm like, I'm pretty left-leaning. Like that.
Like I'm in the center, but I lean left.
To talk... Well, no. I don't even go that far. I usually say, the thing that you'll find about me, quote unquote, is that I'm very open to new ideas, and then I just let them talk about their politics and don't let them question me about mine, and it works out fine because nobody really wants to talk to me about what I'm doing. But there are some things that that I think that transcend, those barriers, I think. Okay. Like forced inscription into the military. No one likes it.
No.
I'm not saying that that really should happen, but I am saying that I do like how the Swiss Army people make you do like 2 years of military service.
I think New Zealand does that as well.
Yeah. And here's the reason why I like it. It's because being in the military, right?
Yeah.
Forces you to get along with all sorts of people.
Well, it's also like, when was the last time you heard about Switzerland or New Zealand being part of a war zone?
Not a lot.
So being mandatory military service for those two countries probably doesn't mean, I'm going to go shoot people. It probably just means I'm going to get trained. I'm going to, become diligent. I'm going to, I'm going to use these 2 years to grow as a person.
Although I will say that it's quite possible. Like, for instance, I know that New Zealand and Australia are not the same. But when I was in the Air Force, there were people from Australia who were serving with us at our U.S. Air Force.
Yeah, Australia is an ally. I don't think New Zealand sends troops, but I could be wrong. I don't know. Maybe they do.
So, boy, oh boy, it would be great if someone would find out.
I learned that, the amount we ask for corrections is inversely proportional to the amount of corrections we get.
It's true. Yeah, and I almost think that I sometimes do it out of spite. one thing I will say, since we aren't doing corrections, is I will talk a little bit about Jennifer Fact Checker today, in that she has picked up a hobby, which is baking.
I've seen some pictures on the Facebooks.
Which is great for me.
Yeah, but you're the beneficiary.
I get to eat all this stuff, and it's really great, and it's really good.
Do you have any...
But sometimes...
Yeah.
I'm like... for instance, she made a princess tarta.
Okay.
And I ate that whole thing within a week.
Well, you can't let it go bad.
Right. Well, exactly. Someone has to do it.
Yeah.
But I've started bringing some stuff to work because I outpace, or she's outpacing me.
Yeah. And if you bring treats,
all the stuff she's making.
If you bring treats to work, even if you're left leaning in a very conservative office, people will start to like you.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that my entire office is conservative. Here's the actual thing that I am a little bit worried about. Because of the amount of leeway I give the people, right? And the amount of times I'm like, yeah, I could see that. Sure, that makes sense. That people might mistake me for being conservative as well, because I'm not. This is
God, you wouldn't want that.
This is what I mentioned, is that I don't think that people of differing political opinions should have to get into fistfights whenever they meet in a certain place and start, coexisting.
Fistfights?
I think it puts me in a minority sometimes. Oh my gosh. That's a bad idea for an off-color joke I'm not going to do anything. you know what puts me in the minority?
Anyway.
Then, yeah, see, can't do it. So, can't do it. So, somebody can. So not me, though.
Let's get off this train. Are you...
Oh, yeah, let's...
Are you, while it's in motion and probably die in the process...
Let's get off this train and into this... No, see, now, you are trying to do a good thing. I am doing the bad thing. I'm getting... I'm just gonna start saying.
So Jennifer is making these. She's baking.
Yes.
Are you undergoing any self-imposed dietary restrictions these days? Are you staying away from stuff that's in these goodies?
I was as you know using an application to track my macros and stay within a certain amount to. Get under a certain weight.
Right.
I stopped using the macros because they didn't mean anything when it comes to the stuff that she was making.
Okay.
There's no way for me to tell how much of anything is actually in... I can guess, right? But it's not the same as, you know, eating packaged food.
Right.
Which has, you know, a certain amount of calorie thing. So what I'm trying to do... I'm not succeeding greatly, but what I'm trying to do is to use my body to tell if I'm hungry or not. And some people can do this.
Well, what else are you gonna do?
Well, it's difficult for me to do, but it's somewhat working. I don't know. I'm still under 180 pounds, but again, I was getting close to 160.
Yeah, what's your and is that your goal, 160?
That is my... Actually, my goal is 150.
Wow.
So that I can weigh 160 while wearing clothes. and carrying a dog. But...
And carrying a dog. And a backpack.
Yeah.
All my camping gear.
Look, all I'm saying is there's a chair that I want to be able to sit in. And if the dog wants to get up on the chair with me, I want the dog to be able to do it. So we'll see how it goes. But I am not fitting into my goal weight as of yet. And part of that has to do with eating so many cookies and cakes.
I heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it's something, and I honestly don't remember where I heard it. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. Salt. Anyway, I heard that the human body has a way of telling you what kind of things you need to eat. Like, if you have a craving for blueberries, it means that your body knows that you're low in whatever nutrients and vitamins are inside blueberries. And so if you feel like eating something, you should eat it, because that is your body's way of saying, I need this. Now, I'm not saying that...
That sounds like a...
I'm not saying that, you know... I'm not saying that you know, is the same for cookies and cake, but, you
know. Look, my body is telling me that I need
these cookies.
Cookies and cake.
Yeah.
So here's one thing. A lot of people that work around me are into the keto diet. Oh, I'm in the keto diet. Oh,
I've heard of it.
I only eat 10. I try to eat less than 10 grams of carbs a day or whatever.
Yeah.
I am of the opinion that this is... not good for me. Maybe it works for them, but I feel better and healthier and all that when I eat mostly carbohydrates and then kind of an equal amount of, mostly carbohydrates, then fat, and then protein.
Yeah.
Like, if my protein intake is like 10% of my dietary intake, I feel great. Whereas these other folks flip it around and they're eating mostly protein and then some fat and some carbs.
Right.
It could be, now I don't know this for sure, but I think we've talked about how I'm a carrier for the maple syrup urine disease.
What?
I don't have it, but I have the gene for it.
How did you figure that
luckily,
out?
Jennifer doesn't have the gene for it. 23andMe.
Ah.
Luckily, Jennifer doesn't have the gene for it, or else Betty could have a serious problem.
Well,
and part of this is that you have a harder time processing proteins. Now, I don't have it. I'm just a carrier for it, which means that I should be able to process proteins just fine.
Right.
That being said,
I
feel better when I eat less proteins.
I always thought that. Now, I don't know what the maple syrup urine disease is, but I have heard that if you're...
It makes your urine smell like maple syrup.
Well, see, that's the thing. I heard that if your urine smells sweet, I haven't heard it compared to maple syrup before, but if it smells sweet, then that's like a signal of diabetes.
Yeah, and that's not exactly what this is.
It's something different.
Something different.
Yeah. Gotcha.
It is called maple syrup urine disease.
It's such a weirdly specific name.
Yeah. Apparently, it attracts Canadians, so you have to be careful. By the way, since we're talking about urine,
hooray.
I gotta put this on the record because, there's a chance that my old Twitter feed is gone, and I just want to put this out there. There was a point where I said... And then other people wrote this, but they wrote it after me, Ben. It's true. They say asparagus can make your urine smell funny. Let me tell you, my urine doesn't do that great for asparagus either. So thank you for taking that time. I appreciate you.
Giving
me this forum?
Was that a joke you wrote long time ago, and now you're upset that other people have also thought of it?
Yes, especially because this is one of the reasons why I got rid of my old Twitter account. Part of my old Twitter usage was me very steadfastly
stealing jokes.
No, the opposite. Defending my old joke. Thing like
right.
Aha, that's funny. I did a similar joke, and it became annoying.
Oh, so I gotcha.
For me and others.
Yeah, that's annoying. I think if you
not,
go,
if all you
do on Twitter is just find jokes that you've written and complain that you thought of it first. That's kind of
Is it complaining?
It's not a good use of Twitter.
It was definitely complaining. What is a good use of Twitter? having friends and fun with friends.
Fun with friends.
That's a good use for it.
They should have called it that.
You know what's a great use of Twitter, though?
What's that?
I'll tell you. It's taking
protest coordination
opinions that your friends don't care about and putting it in your feed over and over and over again so they can't scroll through their feed without reading it. You know what's even better? All your friends who have joined Instagram so they don't have to do that, just typing something out, taking a screenshot of it, and putting it on Instagram so that now I have to look at it when I'm moving through Instagram.
It's so hard to be on the internet these days, isn't it?
It is.
Life is terrible. People are putting things in my timeline I don't want to see.
Exactly. Actually, I'm not really looking at timelines. I'm still off Twitter. I did go back to Reddit because of Watchmen. Because there are things in Watchmen that people notice that I have not noticed, and they post about it on Reddit, and then I'm like, "What? Oh, amazing! It's pretty cool."
I'm still reading the comic. I haven't finished it, but I'm still in the process of reading it.
Yeah. And you totally should read it you watch it, I think, because you will like it better.
Well, see, that's another thing where I saw somebody say, and I can't remember where I saw this, but some Facebook friend was like, HBO's Watchmen is a very niche market for people, for millions of people who've read Watchmen. But, he can't understand why people who haven't read the comic are watching the show.
I have a friend of mine who hasn't read the comic and is watching the show.
Are they enjoying it?
Yeah. But occasionally they'll come to me and they'll say, "Well, why? What about this?"
Exactly.
And I'll say, "I don't know either. Hey." but But yeah, they are still enjoying it. And that's how it's written. It's written to be enjoyed by people who haven't read the book.
Well, I should hope so.
It's if you have read the book, you get a little bit more insight into it. But it's still an enjoyable show, from what I understand.
Yeah.
They're kind of obsessed with it, so...
I did finish watching Stranger Things Season 3.
Ah, yes. Stranger Things Season 3, which is good.
Yeah.
Oh, and I finished Stranger Things.
I finished Good Omens too. I had some time, so I also finished Good Omens.
Yes, I watched that too. It's pretty good. So, spoiler for Stranger Things Season 3.
Yeah.
So the guy and the girl in the uniforms.
The guy. Right? Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Steve.
Were supposed to be Steve and love interests.
I can't remember her name, but they worked at Scoops Ahoy.
Yep. Supposed to be love interests, and the two actors decided that they didn't want to do that. And it was great.
And it played out in a very different way.
And I really liked the fact that they didn't become a love interest.
Yeah.
That was very cool. Good for them.
Also, I say that actress whose name I can't remember is Ethan Hawke's child.
Yes. Ms. Hawke, I believe is her name.
Ms. Hawke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Miss.
Ethan Hawke and who was the main gal protagonist in Pulp Fiction? Uma Thurman? Hawke. Yeah, that's Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter.
Ah, oh, jeez. Who? Save some for the rest of us, kid. Come on. Gene lottery, whatever they call it.
She's become quite the internet meme, though, with that image of her holding up a sign. Oh, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
She's I wouldn't be surprised. I don't remember what it said in the TV show, but she holds up like a whiteboard, and you know she's probably making fun of Steve. And people use that image as a macro to write whatever message they want, like Epstein didn't kill himself or whatever, you know, whatever the big meme of the day.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's something. We could talk about this. This is one of the few news things I got. And the reason is because I was looking at Reggie Watts's Instagram.
He was in town recently.
As you know, did you see him?
No, he played the on the board's 40th birthday party.
Which I did not go to. He is on a late night TV show.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Reggie Watts and Goody Lawrence have shared a stage.
We've shared a bill.
Sadly enough, Goody Lawrence has often gone after Reggie Watts, which is not good for any performer.
Well, at that point in our Spin the Bottle career, we were often the second to last performance.
True. But he is now James Corden's band leader.
Yeah.
On a late night show. And Hillary Clinton was one of the guests recently.
Okay.
And he posted a picture from his band leader station of Hillary Clinton and I guess James Corden. And maybe
probably.
I don't know. There were three people, and the one I saw for sure was Hillary Clinton. And his entire Instagram feed was full of people saying Epstein didn't kill himself.
What?
And at first, I was confused as to what it was because I was thinking "Welcome Back, Cotter," which didn't make any sense to me. And then I was like, "Oh, I get it." So I guess the implication is that she killed him. Which, come on. I mean,
he was a ringleader of like a child sex ring, and everybody is like, Bill Clinton's part of that.
Yeah, and here's the thing, of course, back during the 2016 election, the people, and this is why I think maybe because here's the thing, Reggie has a lot of friends and admirers who aren't one of the major two political parties. They're kind of fringy people.
Okay.
And during the 2016 election, a lot of the fringy people were saying it doesn't matter who you vote for. Either way, they're connected to Jeffrey Epstein. And then they would put articles about his thing and all that.
And it's all taking place in the basement of that pizza place.
No, see, they're different. They are all taking place at his magic island or whatever. But the thing is that his magic island was a real place. And yeah, he and then this is not, oh gosh, Ben, I'm not doing it, but I am doing
Let's
it.
Let's not get into it.
Here's the thing. He is someone who did have people who were famous come to his places, right?
Yeah.
This is a true thing.
Yeah.
And both Donald Trump and Bill Clinton did go to those places. Also a true thing. So yeah. Those things are real.
Well, I have seen video footage of Trump and Epstein. I have not seen video footage of Clinton and Epstein. But I'm not saying it doesn't exist.
Right. But the thing is, in order for that to be an idea that they killed him, you have to also buy into the sort of Lady Macbeth Clintons, where they've killed like 15 people or whatever, and there is, you know, that thing.
Are a lot of right wing memes about people who have worked for the Clinton Foundation have gone missing suddenly.
Now here's the thing, him not committing suicide but actually getting killed by someone.
Yeah,
that makes sense to me.
That's what we were all thinking when we heard the story. Epstein found dead in prison. Oh, somebody killed him.
The idea that it's Hillary Clinton specifically who ordered his death seems to be not true.
I want it to be her specifically committing it. I want to see footage of her sneaking, you know, past the guards.
She gets to the ventilator shaft. And,
exactly.
Yeah. It is, you know, I'm sure that there's someone somewhere who believes that. But it's not me.
No, someone somewhere, but not you.
Yeah, and you can't. I'm sorry, but there's video evidence can be faked, Ben.
Yep.
There's no way for me to. How would you ever make me believe it? You know, it's a lost cause.
I saw a deep faked video where a guy went through all of his impressions, and it was really impressive. Because he just went through like 30 impressions of famous people, and his face changed with every one.
Yeah,
he was a white dude. It was real awkward when he got to Morgan Freeman, but you know, otherwise everything looked really good.
It really is like a morphing moment for, you know, the Michael Jackson black and white video. When that came out, and you're like, whoa, this is something that I've never seen before. Same kind of thing.
Yeah.
The deepfake. Here's the thing. Where's the deepfake of my dad saying he's proud of me? I think that would be great, actually.
That's a new business plan right there. You get people who, you know, bring in a couple pictures of their parents, and suddenly they can talk to them in VR.
Yeah. Oh. It's gonna happen, Ben. Eventually. I know this for a fact.
Yeah.
And by I know this for a fact, I mean, you know, I don't know this for a fact, but I think it's going to be true. Teleconferencing. People working from home and teleconferencing. You're going to deepfake yourself, clean-shaven, wearing a suit in the teleconference.
That's your avatar.
Yeah, exactly. Your avatar is going to be, like...
Heck, my avatar is going to look like Brad Pitt.
The whole thing, right, where it used to be that if you FaceTime someone or you have a webcam up, you get to actually see the real person you're talking to. It's not gonna happen. You're never gonna know who it is you're anymore.
It's gonna be a Snapchat filter, first of all.
Here's the other thing, Ben. If you guys never meet, if you never actually meet, what does it matter? In the long run.
What does it matter?
Is our digital mask going to become our real face? You know? It's possible. It is a thing. And I don't know. The great thing is that I'm going to be old.
What do you mean going to
and
be?
And not care what I look like as much. Although what I want to look like is a wizard, and I think I'm going to be able to pull it off.
Speaking of wizards, I saw Jim Jarmusch's The Dead Don't Die last night. And have you seen this?
How was it?
No,
I'm interested.
It was you should watch it. It's got Tom Waits, and Tom Waits definitely looks like a wizard. He looks like a Beauty and the Beast style beast wizard.
Ah, oh, gotcha. Yeah. Cool.
But
I just thought of something.
What's that?
I'd like to put on a fake beard, but I don't know if I could pull it off.
Hey.
Hey. Okay. So well, cool. I did see Tom Waits in The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Oh yeah.
Which is good.
Not seen that.
Yeah. It's good. It's on Netflix. You should take a look at it.
That's a Coen Brothers flick, right?
It is. All right. Yeah.
When that came out, didn't I hear something bad about it? Isn't it? Does it not work in some way? Is it problematic?
Oh boy, I'd like to know how. Maybe, but I can't think.
For some reason,
why.
That name that movie has like a red check mark next to it in my mind, because when it first came out, people were not complaining about it, but saying that, you know, it was not tone deaf, but problematic in some way.
Okay. Well, I can't guess of what it is without spoiling some things for it.
All right. Well, watch it again with that filter.
Well, no. I mean, I can think of a couple things that they might have been talking about, but I can't tell you what they are without ruining the thing for you. Are you planning of not watching it?
I'll probably watch it eventually. You don't need
to
say anything.
Then I'm not gonna mention it then. But once you do watch it, say, hey, I saw it, and then we could talk about it, maybe, if I remember.
Cool.
Death Stranding is coming out. I'm gonna wait until after Thanksgiving to get it, probably.
Is that a game?
It's a game. It's been a while since it was gonna come out. Norman Reedus from Walking Dead is in it.
Oh, I saw an ad for that recently.
Yeah. It's bizarre and cool and all that, but it's just one of those things of, I've got stuff that I can play already.
Right.
There's a new Jedi game coming out that we might want to get. And, you know, we have a limited budget for games.
Right.
So I'm waiting. But I feel as though... We're seeing more and more celebrities showing up in games. I think it's only going to get more and more like that, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, it's the next, that's going to be the next, like, Hollywood thing is, you know, you're starring in a game.
Yeah. Oh, and but here's the thing. What they should do is here's the thing. If a video game, I'm just putting this out here, any video game people that are listening, if you came up with a way for me to spend, you know, however many dollars and however many days at your capture facility so that you could put me in your video game as an asset and I could play myself as myself, I would totally do it. That would be awesome as far as I'm concerned.
I doubt that would fit into your limited budget for games.
Yeah, well, no, that's the thing, is that I would just play that game, whatever it is. The game that I'm playing now, constantly, over and over again, as we know, Skyrim VR, I have made a character based on myself and told myself that I would only make choices that I would make if I would make those choices in the game. I have murdered people already, so that's...
So what you're telling me is you're a terrible person.
I'm saying if I were in a fantasy world, I would eventually murder people. And that's
just
something that I know about myself. Well, no, they were attacking me. So is that murder, self-defense? I don't know. But then the people that weren't attacking me that I just snuck up and killed, that would be murder.
That would be murder.
But in my defense, they were guards, so...
So they had coming.
Ooh, boy. There's just no way for me to come out of this sounding all right. But, you know, hey, speaking of there's no way of me coming and sounding all right, what's our next Goody Lawrence thing to cover?
I don't know. What did we talk about last time? We talked about... welcome to the new space. Yeah. Oh, so do you know what is next?
No, what is next?
All right. It was basically based off of a play that was happening at the time, devised by Matt Fontaine, I think, and Tim Sanders, called Market Research Theater.
Oh, yeah, Market Research Theater, which I thought was a pretty cool idea, although don't know about the execution necessarily, because some of it, I believe that there was some... Now, granted, if they listen to this podcast, they might not agree, but I think some of the choices that they made were made in service of the idea rather than in service of the actual data that was coming in.
Right.
Like, I think they changed some things that were really working just because they thought it should be different. So, I don't know.
Yeah. So, we did a Goody Lawrence Market Research Theater.
Aha. Because we are nothing if not derivative.
Exactly. It was more of a companion piece than derivative.
Oh, okay. Well, now I feel that.
I honestly don't remember this. But it happened on June 4th, 2003.
Okay.
And there's a long script. I'm not going to read it. But what it basically boils down to is we have clipboards. We ask the audience how we can improve the Goody Lawrence experience. And one of the things that the audience has said, and this is a quote from the script, is one of the things the audience wanted from a Goody Lawrence experience is less Paul and Ben. Yeah. Audiences also enjoy looking at pretty girls more than a couple of dorks. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Molly.
Ah, yes.
And then what ended up happening was Molly fed you marshmallows while you slapped your ass, and Jason Schmidt chased me around throwing pillows at me.
I feel like possibly
I threw candy into the audience. And you what?
Yeah. I feel like maybe I wrote that part of it. Like, why? You're getting abused, whereas I'm eating marshmallows. That sounds like a me script for some reason.
So I have a quote from Joe Bowling. He reviewed That Spin the Bottle. Do you want to hear what he says about that piece?
Yes, I do. I would like to, yeah.
So Joe Bowling on the TPS Online message boards wrote a review of That Spin the Bottle, and he said, Paul Goody and Ben Lawrence delivered a scene of chaos involving marshmallows, butt-slapping, candy from a bucket of shoes thrown into the audience, a pillow fight, a pretty girl, and raucous music. Great fun.
Hey, Joe Bowling.
Joe Bowling, everybody. Joe Bowling.
So, Bama Roger.
Yeah.
At one point in time, I forget what venue it was, but she was talking about her experience on stage. And one of the things she said that I completely remember was I performed the vagina monologues with my vagina, and Joe Bowling said that he couldn't understand what I was saying or I didn't enunciate properly, and I believe that Joe Bowling was in the audience at the time.
Conflict.
And I can see two different ways of him responding to that. I don't know, you know, which one is true. One was him laughing hysterically, and then the other one is him just staring at her. I feel like him just staring at her might have been the way it was, but maybe he wasn't there at all.
I think if he were there and heard something like that, he'd probably, I don't think he would laugh raucously, but he'd probably like stare at her, but a small smile creeps across his face.
Oh yeah, I can
maybe
see
nods his head a little bit.
Joe Bowling is an interesting folk guy. He did a lot of theater reviewing. Did he do it on his website? Is that where?
No. At the time, tpsonline.org was, this was in the land before Facebook. And so,
oh yeah, yeah. Because I knew it was an online thing, but I didn't know what the.
No, it was on. Basically, he posted on the message boards at TPS Online.
But I mean, people really did start to trust his judgment on things sometimes, or at least pay it heed.
Yeah.
I feel like again, somewhat of a character, one could say for sure.
Yeah.
But an interesting fellow.
He
and
was
speaking of somewhat of a character, but an interesting fellow. And you can finish this because there's going to be a time like, hey, buddy.
Joe Bowling saw, he was famous in Seattle because he saw everything. He went to every performance and wrote a review about it and wrote notes on his programs. And Shane Regan, who works at TPS, says they have a file cabinet that contains all of Joe's programs with his notes on them.
Oh, nice. That's really cool. Speaking of nice and really cool, here comes Betty. And barefooted in the scary basement, because that's how she rolls.
She's taking her feet into her own hands, not wearing shoes in the basement.
So.
Hey, Betty. How's it going?
Good.
So what's up with your neck? I'm looking at your neck. I'm looking at your neck. You have, like, scratches on your neck.
Oh, except from the cat. I was doing something with fake blood, and I...
Oh, okay. Good, good, good. Yeah, Betty is interested in fake blood, and putting it on herself. For reals.
Okay, cool. Anyway, what's up?
What's up, Ben?
Not much. You know, it's dry here. It's this is the first week in November. It has not rained in Seattle since the late 50s.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
It has rained here. Uh-huh. What's up with that?
I don't know. Global warming?
Is everybody getting nosebleeds?
Well, I don't know. I've not gotten one, but I can't speak for everybody else.
Dry air makes my nose bleed.
Ah.
Yeah, we're thinking about moving to the desert just to, torture her. she touched my nose.
Well, on the one hand, the dry air helps my sinuses, but on the other hand, it's because they're constantly bleeding.
How are things, Betty? What's new with you? What are you excited about? What's the haps?
Well, it's Friday. I'm gonna go skating and see my friends again. Also, today, I'm gonna go to Books A Million and get some hot chocolate and stuff.
That's right. We are going to go to Books A Million as soon as this podcast is over. Which
Books
is
A Million.
8 minutes. Oh, yeah. Do you know about Books A Million, Ben?
I think
like
you've
Barnes
mentioned it.
It's like Barnes & Noble for weenies. Anyways, I'm gonna go.
All right, see you, Betty. Books A Million. It's like Barnes & Noble for weenies.
Barnes & Noble for weenies.
Yeah, whereas I would think that like Barnes & Noble for weenies would be Toys in Babeland. Hey!
Hey-o.
Whoa, is that still around?
Yeah, it's just called Babeland these days.
Oh, that's too bad. I like that. That was a good joke. Good joke. But yeah. So, it's pretty cool. It was the place where famously, Jennifer was, oh, hey, Jennifer. Jennifer, she just walked by, but, I wanted to get her take on it, whether or not she still thinks it's weird.
Was there an incident in the Books A Million?
When we were here, the first time we were here, she, got a little freaked out because there was a, black author's section in the book of books.
Ah.
Hey, Jennifer.
Not just authors, Jennifer. But black authors.
Jennifer, I'm raving my hand at her. She can't see me. Oh, well. Jennifer, when you're listening to the podcast...
if you're listening to the podcast.
Sorry about being pestering. But I really don't think that she saw me. And that was the idea is that, you know, it's kind of weird why, you know...
Right.
Black authors, or as we like to call them, authors. In their defense, because I inquired about it, they said it was because they had had some African American students in one of their stores somewhere say that it was too difficult to find books by black authors there.
Gotcha. And
so they made a section
that kids could use to find stuff by black authors. You know.
And when you hear that explanation, it all sounds very reasonable and innocent. But on first, but on first blush, because of where the store is located and the history there, you're wondering why they're separating.
I mean, in a place where there are people still alive today who went to segregated high schools.
Yeah.
And not still alive, like, living in nursing homes. Like, alive, walking around, and, you know.
People in nursing homes can walk around.
Are you sure? I don't think they let it happen.
No. Tied to their beds the entire day.
We talked about today at work the difference between a retirement center and a nursing home. Because of them saying... somebody made the statement that... about me being in a nursing home, and I was like, "Oh, that'd be kind of cool." Walk around, with the, and they're like, "Well, we're talking more about a intense care facility." And I was like, "All right."
My grandmother just moved into an assisted living facility, which I think is, you know, new parlance for nursing home.
Yes. But the places where elder abuse and theft happens,
thanks
is
for that,
the place
Andrew.
Where I. Don't want to go.
Right.
That's the basic. Because there are people, Ben, I can't believe it, but people who hurt old people.
I know.
On purpose because they want to.
Maybe and an old person kicked their dog when they were a kid.
I think it's because they're weaker than them and they're cowards.
Well, now you're getting into the whole psychology of it.
What someone's going to say, they're going to be like, "Oh yeah, well, if I'm such a coward, what if I beat you up?" And I'm like, I'm weaker than you too. You're still a ow, quit it. That's
ow, quit it.
Yeah, I am not impressed by someone stronger than me beating me up. You just can't. And if you can beat me up, you're stronger than me. So
have at it, friends.
Yeah.
Get in line.
There's a lot of stuff going on in the Midwest these days. People talking about specifically like preparing for prepping for, you know, problems.
Yeah.
And this is the way it works. If the lights go out, right, if there's no more electricity, there's going to be violence. The idea is that people won't have food and they'll be fighting each other to get it. And so the way that they stop this from happening is they stockpile food. And all I can think is that if you're stockpiling food, what that means is somebody who hasn't stockpiled food is going to go and get your food stockpiled. So there's no way to win. And then they have guns to fight off the people who are going to get their food.
Which they are stockpiling.
So your life is going to consist of eating canned food and shooting people who want to eat your canned food.
Right.
And all I can imagine is that you're going to be protecting this canned food that you hate. You can't stand the canned food anymore at this point.
But you'll be damned if someone else is going to take it because you're a good Christian. Yeah.
And then I was thinking, oh my God, what would life be like at this point? You know what I mean? You're just constantly just eating to survive, to do something that doesn't matter. I'm like, right, what else is life?
Oof.
You know?
Takes a...
So that's why having fun is important. Fun is the big... You eat so that you can have fun, Ben. That's what I'm saying.
Have fun while you can, because in the future, we're all just going to be shooting each other over, you know, Del Monte peaches.
But here's the thing. Stack the Del Monte pieces... Del Monte pieces. It's like Reese's Pieces. But it's a candy shell with a small piece of peach on the inside of it. I don't like it. But you can take the cans and make little can pyramids. And that's kind of fun.
That's fun. And then you can, you know, bowl with them.
Yeah,
throw
exactly.
Them down. Play
and
peach pong.
Like, what do you use for a ball? Obviously, another
human
can
head.
Of peaches. Oh, okay, or a human. And with that, Ben, I request that until next week,
all right.
You keep it wrong.
We'll leave it at that. And in case you try to do otherwise, keep it wrong, Paul.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
I'll talk to you
Always
later.
Always great talking to you.
Yep.
Yep.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. And now,
the rest of the story.
Oh, shoot. Ben talked. No, and also the furnace is on, so I'm going to have furnace room tone, which is the worst kind.
I think that's the subtitle of this podcast. Oh, shoot, Ben talked.
No. Oh, no. Okay.
All right.
All right, I'll see you later, Ben. For reals. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah.